There is a very significant resolve, heightened, I think, by the confrontation that Zelensky had with in the Oval Office. There is a clear resolve in Ukraine to go on fighting, if necessary, alone, because they know that what is at stake here is not some frontier dispute or not some financial maneuver over rare earths. It is the very existence of their country.
Hello, I'm Brendan Donnelly from the Federal Trust, and this is John Stevens, the chair of the Federal Trust. Last week, we recorded a discussion of implications of Mr. Trump's policies for European defence. So much has happened in last week that we want to take this further, and I'll be putting further questions to John. John, at the end of last week, Keir Starmer had a friendly conversation with Donald Trump, which was initially regarded as having been a diplomatic success. Some of the shine came off that diplomatic success when there was a contrast was drawn between that conversation and the confrontation between Mr. Zelensky and Donald Trump. And then again, over the weekend, Starmer made it very clear that he supported Ukraine, he supported Zelensky. He played a constructive role, most people say, in bringing together this meeting of heads of state and government. Where are we now on this checkerboard? Do you think that Keir Starmer is still trying to ride two horses at the same time, the European and the American horse?
Well, I think he obviously is. But let's step back a moment and consider precisely the significance of the confrontation between Trump and Zelensky, because what really happened, it seems to me, is that the mask slipped from President Trump completely. He is now clearly in the Russian camp on the Ukraine situation. He wants a peace deal on Mr. Putin's terms. And the question is really why he wants that. And this is not just a strategic question, a military question. There's also a very significant economic element in it. And I'm not merely referring here to the mineral deal and the way in which Trump seems to think that the Ukrainians should be paying for their defense if there's going to be any further connection with the United States, that looking at it from an investment point of view, but also the suggestion that there are American financial interests who now want to bring Russia back into the economic fold, raise sanctions, and even reintroduce Nord Stream 2 and get the Europeans to buy Russian gas. I mean, there is an extraordinary volte-face in all of this, which is beyond the strategic dimension. And that's even before you consider whether this strategy of wanting to detach Russia from China is really a realistic one, or is it actually more to do with detaching Russia from Iran and the concerns that Israel have towards the Iranian nuclear program? And there's so many different factors in this that what is driving Trump's rejection, very clear rejection of the Ukrainian position and being prepared to essentially hand Ukraine over to President Putin. That has really fundamentally changed the context in which this is taking place. So when we come on to the position of where Britain stands and where the Europeans stand, I mean, clearly we've had this conference in London, which has expressed a determination to continue supporting Ukraine and supporting the Ukrainian position of resisting Russian aggression. But it is not yet clear how much substance there is in that. There was quite a lot of background stuff on the readiness of the French in particular to step up the nuclear dimension of this and the role that the Germans might be playing this and the role that the British might be playing in this. But that Starmer is still constrained to say, well, we need the Americans on board. Ukraine must be reconciled with Trump and the Trump position. This does confuse matters, it seems to me.
If events play out in such a way as you're suggesting they might, and it becomes entirely clear that Starmer is not interested in supporting Ukraine against Russia. Can the Europeans, including the United Kingdom, step into the breach? If so, in what time frame?
Can the Europeans, without the UK,
Yeah,
step into the breach?
with or without the UK, but certainly without the US.
I think so, certainly in the short run. I mean, there is the issue of resources here and whether an immediate consequence of what has happened is that the EU will take a portion of, or perhaps all, the Russian assets that are currently frozen under their jurisdiction as part of the funding. That is, I think, quite an interesting test of resolve here. Equally, whether the Germans push through a change in the constitution, the removal of the deficit ceiling in their constitution, and we'll see that in the next couple of days, whether that's going to be possible. And then also the negotiations underway at an EU level for a beefed up European fund for defence, which would be outside the deficit limits of the Maastricht criteria for the Eurozone. And that again is something which is imminent. That will be the first indicator. But at the moment, it doesn't seem that the Ukrainians have got an immediate danger of military collapse. I mean, this seems to be the line that President Trump is taking. But that is very much the Russian line. Continental military experts think that Ukraine's military position on the ground is actually not nearly as bad as that. And that there is a very significant resolve, heightened, I think, by the confrontation that Zelensky had with in the Oval Office. There is a clear resolve in Ukraine to go on fighting, if necessary, alone, because they know that what is at stake here is not some frontier dispute or not some financial maneuver over rare earths. It is the very existence of their country.
I talked about the role that the United Kingdom might play. You've talked about the EU's proposals to liberate more resources and at the national level among the EU members. How crucial will the role of the United Kingdom be in making its contribution to any European stepping into the breach of the Americans abandoning effectively Ukraine?
Well, the gap is in intermediate nuclear weapons. That is the crucial area. Now, we don't have those, but we do have considerable expertise in that field and could play a very significant part in upgrading European nuclear deterrence at the intermediate level. That means having the capacity to put nuclear warheads on the missiles that we are currently sending to the Ukrainians and which we have ourselves. That are currently conventionally armed. And that is a technical issue in which Britain could play a very significant part. Also, Britain clearly could play a part if it comes to having troops as part of any peacekeeping process. But we're not yet there at the peacekeeping process. We haven't got peace. And the question right now is if the American nuclear umbrella is no longer credible, can the Europeans, in short order, step up to provide a sufficient cover to deter the Russians going nuclear in this conflict if it continues? And I think the answer to that is yes, there is the capacity there. And I think that's a calculation based on an assessment of where the Russians really are in terms of readiness to go nuclear if necessary, where they are on the ground in Ukraine, where the Chinese are in this situation, who have been assumed to have imposed a veto on any form of Russian shift to the nuclear dimension. And the question is, can Ukraine keep in the fight for another 6 to 9 months? And can the Europeans resist potential Russian nuclear blackmail in that interval as this doubt over the US commitment to the nuclear umbrella persists or increases?
Will the European Union or will a European defence community based on the EU ever be able to supplant or replace a defanged NATO, which has been weakened by the effective withdrawal of the United States?
Well, I think it's clear that NATO without the United States is a very different animal, and that the structures that exist there would have enormous gaps in them, which would need to be filled. But whether a European defence structure that emerges from this rearmament that is underway, particularly if it takes on a nuclear dimension, as I think it will, what the precise structures are to control that and to finance that, is it going to be with the EU or is it going to be using the NATO structure or what? It's quite clear that it's going to be more than just the EU, I think, because although I think this process is going to tremendously accelerate a rapprochement between the UK and the EU and leading, I would say, eventually to rejoining, I don't see that happening as fast as the requirements are for a military structure if the Americans do indeed completely pull out of NATO.
What is Russia's long-term territorial set of aspirations in Europe? You've talked about the way in which it's plausibly argued that Putin simply wants the elimination of the Ukrainian state. Are people in Poland and the Baltic states worried reasonably about a physical attack on them by Russia?
Well, they're certainly worried. I
Is
think
it
that,
reasonable, this worry?
yes, I think it is to, certainly with regard to the Baltic states, because I think Putin has said on numerous occasions that he regards the collapse of the Soviet Union as having been a great disaster. And the suggestion is that he wishes to restore the Soviet Union. And of course, the maximalist position which the Russians have taken on occasions when talking about a possible peace deal in Ukraine has included the withdrawal of NATO forces from all the former Soviet pact countries. That's not quite the same thing as them pulling out of NATO, but nevertheless, it is a sense of a rollback and a restoration to a substantial degree of the power position that Russia enjoyed when it was the Soviet Union. So I think these concerns are justified, but there is a tremendous amount of illusion in this because I do believe that the role of China here is very important. I think the Chinese have welcomed the Russian assault on Ukraine because this is part of locking Russia into economic submission, certainly, to China. And the Chinese strategy has been to create a continental, a land-based hinterland and links to Europe and to the Middle East that is not dependent on the maritime routes, which nearly 90% of their trade currently take, which are, of course, dominated by the US Navy. So, this continental strategy of China, of having a land Silk Route, that is very much part of their thinking about Russia. And I think this is very relevant to speculation about whether we are going to get a peace in Ukraine anytime soon. Because from the Chinese point of view, with Trump saying, well, I want to make a deal with Putin because I want to detach the Russians from the Chinese, I'm not sure the Chinese are going to be very keen on that. And so how they play this situation now is absolutely crucial. But then I come back to the point that there are people who think that Mr. Trump's real focus is not actually detaching the Russians so much from the Chinese, but detaching the Iranians from the Russians in the immediate run. And that this is to do with Israel's concerns over an Iranian nuclear weapon. So there is a lot of complexity in this situation.
Do you think that the European Union, or perhaps more precisely France, United Kingdom, and Ukraine, will be able to come up with a viable peace plan, which will then be put to Trump? If there is such a viable peace plan, what will Trump's reactions be to it, do you think?
Well, a viable peace plan which does not rely at all on the United States.
Well, somehow fudges the question of whether the United States is a guarantor of it.
Well, I think there is a question of whether Trump will feel that if the Europeans do this on their own, or look as though they could do this on their own, and that might depend on other players, in particular the Chinese, that they feel that they have actually missed a trick and that they are losing influence over Europe for no gain, for a gain which, in fact, if anything, is a Chinese gain. And equally, from a Russian point of view, detaching Europe from America has been a very long-standing objective of foreign policy in Moscow. So there are a number of factors which could make a European-only deal that creates peace, at least for a while, whether it be a lasting peace, whether it be a seriously embedded one, but one which is certainly an extended ceasefire. That is quite possible. But how the Americans would actually react to that is not quite clear, because there will be voices in Washington, ones which are close to Trump, who will say, look, as long as we are the guarantors of European security, we are without question the greatest power in the world. If we cease to have European dependence upon us strategically, if Europe is able to create its own autonomy strategically, then that is a great loss for American power. And of course, Trump does see the EU as a rival. I mean, this is an economic rival. So I'm not yet clear how precisely this whole position is going to play out. It looks as though Trump and his colleagues are playing this really from day to day. There doesn't appear to be a consistent and long-term strategy here.
Come back finally to Keir Starmer. In a month's time, do you think we will be lauding his role in Ukraine and perhaps even brokering a ceasefire? Or will he be somebody who is yet another victim of the illusion that the British can act as a bridge between Europe and the United States?
I think he could be very significantly praised by the Continentals if he plays a role in assisting this replacement of the US nuclear umbrella, and encourages that process, and maybe matches French suggestions of being ready to station British nuclear-capable aircraft, for example, in Germany. That would be one test, something which the French are currently suggesting as a way of bridging this gap. But I think there is this deep problem vis-à-vis the United States, because for Britain to have a full-blown strategic divorce, I mean, leaving aside the economic side of this and the question of tariffs and trade deals and things, but simply at a strategic level, a military level, we are so bound into the United States at so many different levels, not just the nuclear level, not just intelligence, far more than any other continental country. And for this to go to its logical conclusion is really very, very difficult for the UK. And I can't see Starmer being able to unravel this in a manner that is satisfactory, particularly given the likely reactions of President Trump to this whole situation. So I'm skeptical about whether this balancing act, which he is playing with some skill, it has to be said, can continue.
Well, if you do a high wire balancing act, of course, you can always fall off and break your neck. In some ways, it's much safer to be on the ground on one side of the wire or the other. But thank you very much indeed. It's very difficult to foretell the future, but you've given us many more of the pieces of the jigsaw to try and foretell the future. Goodbye, and I hope those of you who followed this and enjoyed it will look at our other podcasts and videos on the Federal Trust website. Goodbye.